Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Garden Smart e-newsletter, Gardening for the Blind, 1001 Hints and Tips by Reader's Digest, Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. And starting with things to do in March from the 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest. Trees and shrubs. Start trees and shrubs from seed. An acorn planted now can reach 4 feet by late summer. After forsythia, spirea, and other fountain-shaped early blossom shrubs have flowered, cut one-third of the oldest canes to the ground. Apply pre-emergent herbicides to prevent spring germinating weeds. Fertilize most plants as soon as growth starts. Fertilize camellias after flowering. And for your annuals, protect all tender plants from any possible late frost. Continue to plant out all summer annuals. Apply pre-emergent herbicides to prevent weeds. Weed, water, and fertilize as needed. For your perennials and bulbs, continue soil preparation, dividing, and new plantings. Water new plantings if the weather is dry. Apply pre-emergent herbicides to prevent spring germinating weeds. Deadhead spring flowering bulbs to prevent seed formation, but do not remove any foliage until it has dried. For your roses, prune overblooming roses, plant container-grown roses, water deeply in dry weather, and apply complete slow-release fertilizer to established but not to new roses. Begin weekly sprays to control black spot and mildew. Spray bushes with dormant oil to control scale, aphids, white flies, and spider mites. Sow seeds of shallow-rooted annuals like portulacas as a living mulch. For your vegetables and herbs, set out more peppers and eggplants. Seed beans, corn, cucumbers, melons, and squash. Foliar feed with a hose-in fertilizer sprayer to keep plants growing. Set out transplants of oregano, sweet marjoram, savory, basil, rosemary, and other herbs. Install a low-volume irrigation system, drip or soaker hose, and mulch. Begin planting hot-weather vegetables like okra and sweet potatoes. For your tomatoes, set out more tomato seedlings. Check plants daily for aphids and early blight fungus. Install a low-volume irrigation system, drip or soaker hose, and mulch. Water and water fertilize as needed. For your lawns, apply slow-release 4-1-2 fertilizer at recommended rates. If soil test indicated other nutrient deficiencies, apply what is required. Apply pre-emergent weed controls for annual weeds. Correct grade in soggy areas. Begin mowing Bermuda grass weekly with blade set at 1.5 inches. For patio and container plants, monitor plants daily for water needs and pest control. Pinchback straggly plants and deadhead spent flowers. Replace the bulbs and winter annuals with heat-tolerant annuals or tropical plants that have colorful foliage. And now from Dave's Garden, A Gardener's Guide to Manure by Anna Burke. Get the scoop on the best manure to use for your garden. Manure is a gardener's best friend. That being said, not all manures are created equal. Some are higher in nutrients than others. Knowing the best type and when to apply is vital for soil enrichment. Most manures are better off composted, as the process kills harmful parasites, bacteria, and pathogens like E. coli and roundworms. Composting also reduces the risk of fertilizer burn on your plants. Although even after composting, some fertilizers are very high in nitrogen and should be applied sparingly. Most gardeners look at the NPK ratio, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, on their fertilizers to help them determine the right fertilizer to apply to their gardens. Manure, unfortunately, is not so easily broken down. The diet of the animal greatly affects the nutrient content, and a quick Google search reveals some conflicting data about the correct NPK value of manure. Luckily, while there may not be a definitive breakdown, some manures definitely contain more of each nutrient than others. Here are the estimated NPK values for livestock manure. Chicken, 1.1/.80/.50. Dairy cow, 0.25/.15/.25. Steer, 0.70/.30/.40. Horse, 0.70/.30/.60. Sheep, 0.70/.30/.90. Rabbit, 2.4/.14/.6/.60. Cow manure is an excellent balanced manure fertilizer, mostly composed of digested grains and grasses, and its relatively low nutrient levels actually make it the perfect manure for most gardens. You don't need to worry about it over-fertilizing your vegetables, which allows you to add lots of composted manure and build organic material in your soil. Depending on where you source your cow manure, it may have bedding incorporated into the poop. Composting cow manure breaks down the bedding, eliminates most harmful pathogens and parasites, and provides a rich compost full of organic material. Composting also eliminates weed seeds, saving you the hassle of weeding out an accidental hay crop from your garden beds. If a farmer offers to spread manure on your garden, wait until the fall. After all your crops are in before spreading to give the manure the winter to break down. Horse manure is slightly higher in nutrients than cow manure. It contains more weed seeds, which means make sure you compost your horse manure in a hot enough pile to eliminate weed seeds and parasites. Horse manure's slightly higher NPK ratio also means the manure is hot and can burn your plants if applied raw. One of the biggest benefits of horse manure for compost enthusiasts is that it contains a lot of dry matter, according to UMass, not to mention the bedding that normally comes with it, which adds bulk and fiber to your compost pile. Most horse farms use wood shavings as bedding, but if you can find a farmer who uses straw, that's even better. Finding horse manure is easy in rural areas. Horse farms are usually eager to get rid of excess manure for free as long as you can come and pick it up. Sheep and goat manure has a few advantages over cow and horse manure, especially in the odor department. The pellets are dry and significantly less smelly than horse and cow dung, making it ideal for urban and suburban areas where neighbors might object to your composting habits. The other advantage is that despite the higher nutrient levels in sheep and goat manure, these potassium-rich pellets have a much lower risk of burning your plants if applied raw. There is still a risk of weed seeds and parasites, so composting your sheep and goat manure is a very good idea. If your garden has a nitrogen deficiency, chicken manure is perfect poo for you. Chicken manure is full of nutrients. However, it is a harsh manure that needs to age and compost well before you apply it to your garden. It is also possible to over-fertilize with nitrogen, which can cause problems for your plants. In tomatoes, too much nitrogen prevents fruit formation, as nitrogen boosts foliage instead. You can avoid this by adding composted chicken manure at the beginning of the growing season and a more balanced manure like cow later on. Rabbit manure. This is one of the few manures that can be applied raw without any fertilizer burn, and pet and even wild rabbits do not carry many zoonotic pathogens, which means it is relatively safe to handle. That being said, composting your rabbit manure eliminates any risk of disease and does not make it any less effective in your garden. Keep cat, dog, and pig manure out of your gardens and compost piles. These manures carry harmful pathogens, bacteria, and parasites that can infect humans during handling and when they come in contact with vegetables. Most backyard compost operations are not sufficient to reduce these risks. These common manures work wonders in the garden. Get your hands on some manure today and start composting for soil fertility later on in the season. And from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Growing Peas by Charlie Narzo-Dozy. One of the best spring vegetables to grow is green peas because they're not always available in grocery stores. Growing them yourself is the best way to be sure you'll get to enjoy these tasty treats. Plus, since they're an early spring vegetable, growing peas is a great way to start your vegetable gardening season. Peas are easy to grow. The key is starting early and choosing the right type for your garden, whether it be English peas for shelling, snow peas for stir-frying, or snap peas for eating fresh from the garden. There are peas to suit your growing conditions and preferences. Here are some tips for growing an abundant crop in your yard. Pea varieties. Fresh green peas are grouped into three categories: English peas, snap peas, and snow peas. While they all grow the same way, each has unique uses. Your first decision is which type of pea are right for you. English peas, also known as shelling peas. These are the most common type of peas available. They are harvested when the pods are filled with seeds, but before they mature and get tough. Some good varieties to try include the classic Wando, good for freezing, Thomas Laxton, high sugar content, Progress Number 9, good disease resistance, and Little Marvel, grows only 15 inches tall. Snap peas, also known as edible potted peas, these peas are unique for their tender pods. You can let them mature like English peas or harvest them when the peas have just started forming. In either case, you can eat the whole pod. Some good varieties to try are the original sugar snap, an early maturing version called early snap. Produces peas 10 to 14 days earlier than sugar snap. Sugar Ann grows only 2 feet tall, and Super Sugar Me produces 4-inch long, very sweet pods, snow peas. This type of pea is common in Chinese cooking. These flat potted peas are harvested as soon as the pods form, but before the peas begin to expand. Some good varieties to try include Oregon Sugar Pod 2, grows only 2.5 feet tall, and Mammoth Melting Sugar, wilt tolerant. Growing peas. Peas are unique in the vegetable world because, being a legume, they can fix their own nitrogen fertilizer. They require little extra fertility to grow and produce. The key to growing peas is to plant them early enough in spring so they mature while the weather is still cool. This means planting in February, March, and April in most parts of the country. They can even be grown as a fall or winter crop in warm areas of the country. Select a sunny location on well-drained soil. While peas can grow in part shade, they will not be as sweet as those grown in full sun. One of the few downfalls of growing peas is seed rot. Do not plant in wet areas where the cool soil is conducive to the pea seeds rotting before they germinate. If necessary, raise the beds 6 to 8 inches high to provide a well-drained planting site. As soon as the soil is dry enough to work, turn in a 2 to 3 inch thick layer of compost. Plant peas 2 inches apart in double rows, spaced 6 inches apart. Most varieties of peas require a pea fence to climb on while they grow. Install your fence of wire, rope, or twigs when planting so you do not disturb the peas later. The young tendrils will have something to climb on immediately after emerging from the soil. Once germinated, your peas will climb the fence to anywhere between 2 and 8 feet tall, depending on the variety. If the weather's dry, water them periodically. Keep the pea bed well weeded, but be careful using weeding tools such as hoes because peas are shallow rooted. The pea harvest. Most varieties of peas are ready to harvest 60 to 70 days after planting. The exact time to harvest depends on the type of pea variety. Peas mature quickly, so check daily once you see the flowers in bloom. Pea pods that have hardened or turned a dull color are over-mature and should be discarded. Pinch off mature peas with your fingers or scissors so as not to disturb the vine. For a special treat, harvest the pea flowers or the last 4 inches of the pea shoots and toss them in a salad of fresh greens. After the pea harvest is finished, pull out the vines and plant another vegetable, such as lettuce or carrots, since it's still early in the growing season. And now from Dave's garden website. There is nothing like walking to get the feel of a country. A fine landscape is like a piece of music. It must be taken at the right tempo. Even a bicycle goes too fast. That was said by Paul Scott Maurer. Lettuce Growing Basics. Start a Salad in Your Backyard by Tamara Goldbrath. With warm weather around the corner, but temperatures still in the cool range, it's a great time to start some lettuce seeds in your garden. Lettuce is easy to grow, matures quickly, doesn't take up much space, offers a cut-and-come-again growth habit that gives you several salads from the same plant. Loose leaf, butterhead, and romaine are the easiest and most nutritious lettuces to grow. What is commonly referred to as iceberg lettuce is generally a waste of time for the backyard gardener. It is fussy and not nearly as tasty. Germination of lettuce seed requires two elements, lots of moisture and light. Do not bury lettuce seeds, but rather scatter them over some fertile, fluffy, moist soil. You may amend with some light fertilizer like earthworm castings before planting. Then sift a small amount of compost on top of the seed and press down gently. You will probably see germination in about a week if soil temperatures are around 50 degrees. Lettuce can and should be grown outdoors in a sunny location as long as temperatures stay above freezing at night. If an unexpected freeze comes, simply toss a few layers of frost cloth on top of the plants and they should be fine. Make sure the soil stays evenly moist as the plants develop. Thin seedlings to allow about 6 inches between plants, or plant 6 inches apart if you aren't starting from seed. Don't worry too much about overcrowding. Leaf lettuces are particularly fast-growing. They reach maturity in 45 to 60 days, while romaine and butterhead bib types take up 70 days. You can harvest individual leaves to eat or give each plant a crew cut about 2 inches above the soil line and let it regrow. There are many beautiful, tasty types of lettuce in all sorts of shapes and colors. Some are more heat resistant, a benefit to those in the south. Others are cold hardy and good for growing in the north. Most varieties are generally disease and insect resistant. You might see a few slugs in damp weather and aphids when temperatures are warmer. Hand pick the slugs or use Sluggo and blast the aphids with water from the hose or release ladybugs. The biggest enemy of lettuce is heat, which is why early, late winter or spring is perfect time to start lettuce. Once regular warmth comes along, 80 degrees or more, lettuce will quickly bolt, meaning the plant suddenly puts on a growth spurt, then sends up flowers and goes to seed. At that point, it's so bitter and chewy, even bunnies won't touch it. For those with limited space, it's a fairly shallow-rooted veggie, so lettuce may be grown in containers, 1 gallon or larger. Container growing also carries the advantage of mobility. You can move the containers to a better spot if the weather's too cold or excessively warm. And from Jerry Boker's terrific Garden Tonics, Dead Bug Brew. Are your ravishing roses being bugged by bugs? Don't let these bad boys take the bloom off your roses. Fight back hard with this proven old-time repellent. The ingredients, 1/2 cup of dead insects, the more the merrier, 1 tablespoon of dishwashing liquid, 1 tablespoon of cayenne pepper, and 2 cups of water. Put all of these ingredients in an old blender, and I mean really old, one you'll never again use for food, and puree the heck out of them. Strain out the pulp using cheesecloth or pantyhose. Dilute the remaining brew at a rate of 1/4 cup of brew per 1 cup of water. Apply with a handheld sprayer to your roses to the point of runoff. And dig it. When extra vigorous canes shoot up from grafted roses, take a close look at them. Root suckers usually have leaves and thorns that look different from the grafted part of the plant, along with slender, more arcing canes. They'll also have different flowers. To keep these suckers from taking over, you need to get rid of them pronto. Dig next to the plant to see where they're attached, then pull or snap them off by hand. Never cut off root suckers right at the soil line. This simply encourages them to grow right back. Don't throw out those banana skins. They make a fantastic free rose fertilizer. Simply work whole banana skins or whole rotten bananas into the soil near the base of your bushes. The potassium in the skins will give them a power-packed boost that helps the plants fend off pests and diseases and delivers up a boatload of beautiful blossoms to boot. And bye-bye, beetles spray. This hot toddy will say a loud, strong, get lost to any Japanese beetle that starts to munch on your roses. The ingredients, 1/2 cup of dried cayenne peppers, 1/2 cup of jalapeno peppers, and 1 gallon of water. Add the peppers to the water, bring it to a boil, and let it simmer 1/2 hour. Make sure you keep the pan covered or the peppery steam will make you cry a river of tears. Let the mixture cool, then strain out the solids. Pour the liquid into a handheld sprayer and spritz your rose bushes from top to bottom. And don't let your roses die on the vine. Dead blooms are an open invitation to pests and diseases. Always cut them off about 1/4 inch above a leaf to encourage new growth. Not all roses are garden prima donnas. A fair number do just fine. So if you don't want to be a slave to your garden, look for these easy care roses. Modern shrub roses, a catch-all category of sturdy plants with abundant flowers and attractive shapes. They do fine with minimal pruning. Polyantha roses, tough, disease-resistant, easy-to-grow roses with large clusters of small flowers born in flushes from spring through fall. Pink-flowered The Fairy is one of the best. Rugosa roses, rugged, disease-resistant roses with showy, fragrant flowers through the summer and showy red fruits, too. And here's a Grandma Putt's pointer. Grandma Putt had a no-fail way to figure out where to set out a new clematis clump. She always looked for a site where the vines could have their heads in the sun and feet in the shade. You see, clematis like cool soil, but bloom best with plenty of sun. So give them a site where low-growing shrubs or bushy perennials will shade their roots. And clematis have a different climbing strategy than most vines. Instead of twining their stems around a structure like wisteria does, they wrap their leaf stems around something that's about finger thickness or smaller, plastic netting around a post or downspout, or a string hanging down from a wall will help them clamber up quickly. Want the vines to cover a trellis or a sheet of lattice? Make sure those structures are made from wood or metal pieces less than an inch across. How can I figure out how much water my sprinkler's putting out? Answer, place several low straight-sided cans like tuna or cat food cans in the area you're trying to irrigate. Turn the water on, wait 15 minutes, turn off the water, see how much you've caught. Multiply that figure by 2 to find out how much water your plants will get in 30 minutes. If it's a little over an inch, you're right on target. Not sure when to water? Your plants will tell you. Here's what to look for. Leaves droop slightly during the heat of the day, but recover in the evening once sun goes down. Leaves are duller or grayer than normal. The foliage of fleshy-leafed plants shrivels slightly or feels soft to the touch. Before you water, always look at the soil to make sure the ground isn't actually waterlogged. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. You have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.